I'm Eleanor Rosamond Barraclough. Join me now for a walk in the woods. This is the most frightening of our literary forests. I feel like I've been walking in it since I read The Hobbit when I was 10 years old. You know you have to pass through it to continue the quest, but every shred of good sense is telling you to turn back. Mark, where are we?
We are in Mirkwood, and as one of the characters in The Lord of the Rings says, there lies the fastness of southern Mirkwood. It is clad in a forest of dark fir, where the trees strive one against another, and their branches rot and wither.
So this is the great Tolkien forest of Middle-earth. What can we expect to encounter here?
Darkness. Black squirrels. Eyes in the trees looking at you at night. Spiders. Magic streams that make you fall asleep. Lights flickering. Voices. Laughter. It's a scary place.
My guide to this horrible forest of Mirkwood is Mark Atherton from Oxford University. Let's start with the name, Mirkwood. Where does that actually come from?
Mirk, in Old English, in Anglo-Saxon, means basically what it means today, a dark and gloomy place. Tolkien got it from early medieval literature, so there are various poems written in the language of Scandinavia, Old Norse, which talk about Mirkvither. He'll find a word in an Old English poem, an Anglo-Saxon poem, and he says that there's no explanation for this, that we've lost the context. And so that's what he's trying to do. Because he was a professor of Anglo-Saxon, he was a professor of medieval literature, and he couldn't do that really in his scholarly writings. So in his fiction, in his poetry, he tries to create the background, what lies behind the name Mirkwood.
And there's an awful lot of literary forests in Tolkien's work. I'm wondering to what extent we can read that as an environmental message. After all, Tolkien grows up quite close to Birmingham, which in the early 20th century is really starting to encroach on the surrounding territory. Do we get a sense of those rather modern ideas, those fears about the disappearing natural world coming into his literary work?
I think we do, because Mirkwood in The Hobbit, where it features mainly and it's mentioned in The Lord of the Rings, used to be called Greenwood the Great. And Greenwood the Great has a shadow over it. In a way, we get two images. We get the Enchanted Forest and the Dark Forest. So the Enchanted Forest is the forest of nature thriving, and the Dark Forest is what has happened to that forest since the shadow has come over it.
And it's that shadowy, dark, dangerous forest that Bilbo and his friends have to cross in The Hobbit. They become hopelessly lost, don't they? But they seem to lose their minds as well. They start hearing things and seeing things.
And Gandalf has said you should keep to the path. But what do? As in any good folk tale, they ignore the warning and they go seeking out the light, and as soon as they get there, the lights disappear, the fire goes out, and then they're stuck there in the inky black darkness.
And it's in that inky black darkness that trees and bushes can start to feel alive in a more animal sense.
That's right. There's the voice of nature, the personality of the trees.
And Mark, you're not just a Tolkien guru, you're also a folk singer yourself. Do you find that inspiration has come from many of these same green and growing places as Tolkien found?
Yes, I started writing songs about 8 or 9 years ago. My inspiration was the medieval literature that I actually teach. But that puts me in a similar situation to Tolkien, who was using the medieval literature that he taught to create his fiction.
You've got your instrument here, so you're going to have to give us a little bit of that.
So this is a song called Dance with the Sun. The way is dark, I cannot see. Eyes in the trees are looking at me. The way is dark, I cannot see. Eyes in the trees are looking at me. But we'll dance with the sun, roll with the tide. Come with the wind, dance, dance with the sun, dance, with the sun.
There are an awful lot of nettles here. You feel rather like Bilbo and his hobbit companions when they get to these horrible dark undergrowths where everything stings or bites or hurts. It's a little bit like the dead marshes with all those midges, isn't it, Mark?
That's right.
Yeah, this definitely isn't a friendly forest.
We need to find a friendly glade with a glimmer of green.
Oh, I like the idea of that. As they make their way through Mirkwood, Bilbo's party see mysterious lights and they hear a hunt progress in the distance. Where is Tolkien drawing for these sorts of influences?
There are folk tales of the other world, the world Tolkien decided to call the world of the elves. Sometimes it's called the other world, the fairyland, fairy. And there's a story, a poem, written in the Middle Ages called King Orfeo or Sir Orfeo. It's a kind of Celtic English adaptation of the story of Orpheus in the underworld. Orfeo has lost his wife. She's been abducted apparently by the king of the other world. And he has become a hermit in the forest. I've got the Middle English text in front of me here. He micht say him besieders, oft in hot under tiders, the king of fairy with his rout come to hunt him all about, with dim cry and blowing, and hounders also with him barking, like no baste they no nom, ne never he nist whither they become. So they hear the dim blowing of the horns, and they can hear the hunts going by. No beast is ever taken, and he never knows where they've gone to. It's just a glimpse, and then it's gone again.
And you can really feel that sort of Tolkien-esque influence from that, can't you? This mysterious other world, particularly linked to the trees, to the forest, to that outside over there, the bit you can't quite see, you can't quite hear. And it's a particularly, elvish sort of mysterious otherness over there.
Well, to go back to Mirkwood or Greenwood the Great for a second, that these mysterious lights and this mysterious hunt is not really part of the darkness that's come across the forest. This is the enchanted forest. The elven king, the woodland king there, turns out to be not very enthusiastic about having dwarves tramping through his forest, but he turns out to be reasonably honourable. And it's the same story really in Sir Orfeo about the woodland king there, who also turns out to be honourable and releases Orfeo's queen, and they're able to return to our world again at the end.
Anyone who's seen Peter Jackson's Lord of the Rings films will know that individual trees can have their own characters in Tolkien. So in The Lord of the Rings, there's the Ents that turn against the evil wizard Saruman, and then I think earlier there's the old willow who captures the heroes. So where do these ideas about living, breathing trees come from?
Again, we're back in a word. And the word I'm thinking of is Ent. And it appears in an Anglo-Saxon poem where it talks about Orthanc enter Yewiok.
Okay, so Orthanc I'm already recognising from Lord of the Rings.
That's right.
So what is it in Lord of the Rings and what does that word mean in
real life? Orthanc enter Yewiok. Orthanc is an adjective there, and it means the clever, technologically advanced construction of the giants. So the word Ent means a giant in Old English. The poet in that poem is admiring the old cities and how they were built and finds them the work of giants. And obviously those two words then became an inspiration for Tolkien. On the one side you have Orthanc, which is where Saruman, the wizard, and Saruman in Old English means the clever, contriving man.
That's pretty appropriate then, isn't it?
Very appropriate. And against him he has the Ents, and he imagines these giants as being tree-like giants, almost a part of the forest itself.
And these sorts of beings, these great beings, they're not necessarily polarized into goodies and baddies in the way that we might expect. Nature can be a force for good, but it can also be a force for evil. Even the Ents, Treebeard, the lead Ent, as it were, he was originally conceived of as a baddie, wasn't he?
That's right. And that's similar to the episode of the Old Forest, where the willow tree tries to trap the travellers, and they need the spirit of the forest there, Tom Bombadil, to come to their rescue. So trees can go bad. Trees can go rotten at the heart.
We've walked through the dark woods and down to the river, which is, I have to say, an awful lot friendlier and gentler than that dense undergrowth. There's a character called Tom Bombadil who's associated with a softer landscape, something rather English, in fact.
Yes, Tolkien, I think, said somewhere, maybe in one of his letters, that Tom Bombadil was the spirit of the Oxford and Berkshire countryside.
And is that something we can see in how he paints Tom Bombadil's world, his home, the trees and the nature around him?
There are some very unusual passages where Tom Bombadil says, "I am he who always was. I was here before the big people. I was here before the little people. I am the master."
So almost like a genus loci, something like that.
That's right. He's the spirit of the place.
But can we really trust in the protection of Tom Bombadil? I mean, the world is dark and nature can be scary.
The world is dark, and The Lord of the Rings is all about a ring which represents symbolically the addiction to power. In Tom Bombadil's country, Frodo puts on the ring and Tom Bombadil can still see him. And he takes the ring and puts it on his finger and he doesn't disappear. Tom Bombadil is immune to the ring. He's a genial genius loci. His friendliness and his goodwill is enough to defeat powerful magic rings that represent evil in the world.
Mark, thank you. Can you play us out with something to evoke that world of Tom Bombadil?
This is a song called Dorchester Hill. It's partly based on a medieval poem which Tolkien knew very well, called Piers Plowman. Back to Dorchester Hill, where the weather was still, sat by the tree, and I fell in a dream. From the green canopy I could see the Thames Valley. From the top of the I thought I saw London town, as no questions tell the lies, actions speak louder than words. Take me away, I cannot stay. Take me away from here, back to Dorchester Hill.